Warren Delano spoiled all his children, but Sarah especially. Delano was a New Bedforder whom, like some others of that inspired seaport, became a China merchant, which in the mid-19th century meant he dealt in opium. He amassed a fortune in the East and retired to a handsome estate on the Hudson River, where Sarah was born in 1854. Yet the Panic of 1857 caught Delano out, and he found himself on the verge of ruin. He returned to China, redoubled his energies, and sold more opium than ever. He fetched his family from America and settled them in Hong Kong, where they lived in Oriental opulence. 7-year-old Sarah found the experience at once overwhelming and mundane. Overwhelming in its initial foreignness, mundane in the way everything attached to family eventually becomes for children. Her worldly education continued when the family returned home. Though legal, the opium trade wasn't respectable, and after Delano decided he'd accumulated enough to weather future downturns, he worked himself away from the business. The family took various routes home. Sarah sailed with a brother and sister to Singapore and then Egypt, where the Suez Canal was under construction. They visited France and England before crossing the Atlantic to America. Along the way, if not earlier, she discovered that travel agreed with her. And during the next decade, she returned to China and France, lived in Germany, and transited the completed Suez Canal. By the time she finally resettled into life along the Hudson, she felt herself a person apart. Few of her neighbors had seen so much of the world. Almost none of her contemporaries had partaken of such exotic experiences. She might not have said she was too good for the neighborhood, but her father said it on her behalf. Warren Delano took special pains to protect his daughter from the young men of the Hudson Valley. The military academy at West Point comprised the closest collection of bachelor males. The cadets found Sarah, who had grown into a tall, slender, self-composed beauty, most enchanting. They came courting, only to be rebuffed by Sarah's father, who understood that West Point, which provided a free education to young men clever and pushy enough to win the approval of their state's elected officials, appealed to the ambitious but impecunious among the nation's emerging manhood, precisely the sort from whom Sarah should be protected. Warren Delano had other suspicions of his daughter's suitors. As a staunch Republican, he distrusted individuals of the opposite persuasion. "I will not say that all Democrats are horse thieves," he declared in a moment of magnanimity. "But it would seem that all horse thieves are Democrats." One young man was vetoed on account of his red hair. Sarah seemed not to resent or resist her father's intrusion into her love life. On the contrary, because she idolized him, she accepted the high standards he set for her suitors. Years slipped past, and she remained unattached to any save him. By the time she reached 25, she was well on the way to spinsterhood, a fate she viewed with outward equanimity. But one day she accepted a dinner invitation from an old friend. During her peripatetic childhood, Sarah had lived in New York City for a time and become close to Anna Roosevelt, called Bammy or Bi, the older sister of Theodore Roosevelt, the future president. Brilliant but afflicted by a spinal ailment, Bammy was, like Sarah, a spinster in progress, and her widowed mother hosted a party for her and her sister, Corrine. Mrs. Roosevelt was playing matchmaker that evening and had also invited James Roosevelt, a fifth cousin of Bammy once removed. The Roosevelts had nothing against distant cousins marrying, as events would reveal, and Mrs. Roosevelt may have been thinking of pairing Bammy with James. But James saw only Sarah. "He never took his eyes off her and kept talking to her the whole time," Mrs. Roosevelt recalled. A Delano Roosevelt match wasn't an obvious one. James was 51 and Sarah 25. James had a son, James Jr., called Rosie, just 6 months younger than Sarah. And James was a Democrat. Yet, if James was old enough to be Sarah's father, that stood him well in the eyes of Sarah's actual father. Warren Delano had done business with James Roosevelt's partners and knew James from clubs they had in common. James's years promised stability in a relationship. James's wealth allayed concerns about fortune-seeking. As for his politics, a series of visits by James to the Delano home opened Warren's eyes. "James Roosevelt is the first person who has made me realize that a Democrat can be a gentleman," he said later, still marveling at the thought. For Sarah's part, she saw in James Roosevelt things she hadn't seen in her youthful suitors. Her father was her model of what a man ought to be. James approached the model as closely as any man could and be plausibly marriageable. In 1880, Sigmund Freud was still a student at the University of Vienna and had yet to loose his theories of psychosexual development on the world. But Sarah's friends didn't require Freud to tell them that much of what attracted her to James Roosevelt was his resemblance to the only man she had ever loved and admired. Perhaps Sarah herself saw this too. In any case, when James Roosevelt requested of Warren Delano permission to marry his daughter, and Delano assented, Sarah accepted the proposal with pleasure. A huge wedding would have been planned had James not been a widower. As it was, the prospect of the Roosevelt-Delano nuptials set dollar signs gleaming in the eyes of dressmakers, florists, coachmen, and caterers up and down the Hudson Valley. James's son, Rosie, had recently married Helen Astor, the daughter of high society czarina Mrs. William Astor. The dimensions of the Astor ballroom established the numerical limit of Ward McAllister's celebrated 400.